Hello and welcome to a special barbecue edition of Underserved, the podcast for the rest of the tech industry. I'm your host, Andrew Jelina. Years back, I decided to get good at barbecue and formed a competitive team called Tasty Bites Barbecue. Along the way, we won some contests, cooked some good food, met some great people, and learned a ton about barbecue. I decided to capture some of this spirit and knowledge in a two-part bonus episode for Underserved. This is the second part of that barbecue bonus episode, where we reveal tips, tricks, and secrets from the pitmasters. If you missed the first part where we got to know the pitmasters, check it out on our website at underserved.fm. First up, we talk to Dave White, Director of Software Engineering at Iron Mountain and a weekend warrior of barbecue. We start our discussion around using a drum smoker, the pit barrel cooker, to master poultry.
What's your favorite thing to make with the pit barrel?
Well, that's a good question. The things I make the most really right now are ribs, pulled pork, and a smoked turkey. Also a smoked chicken. Now, I would say that my favorite thing to make is probably the turkey because it is mind-blowing how good that turkey comes out. And just the reaction on the crowd is worth every minute of it. You know, dry brine it first, cook it in there for the required time, and it blows minds. Like, everyone kind of knows what to expect when you put a rib down. And there's good ribs and there's bad ribs. I'd say I make pretty good ribs, but those turkeys, man, those things are unreal.
I agree. I think Noah Glanville is the guy that started Pit Barrel, and I think he called it a chicken cooking machine, or a poultry cooking machine, more accurately. And I got the turkey hanger, I think the second year I had it. Did the same thing you said, dry brined it, had it covered in rub in the fridge and covered up for a day or two to let the salt penetrate and really tenderize and moisten the meat. Hung that thing in the pit barrel, ran it real hot, like over 300, I think, the whole time, pulled it out, and I was shocked at how good it was, and everyone else was. I'm like, no more dry, terrible turkey for Thanksgiving. We are doing this every time.
Right. I think that's my favorite, just for that reason. It's not actually my favorite thing to eat, but as far as the cooking technique and just the pleasure of the crowd goes, I think it might take the cake.
Now, when I was going through my deep frying phase, when I was trying to figure out those wings that you've seen that we've done before, I was trying some of that around Thanksgiving. We had some turkey breasts that we'd bought at Market Basket, dry brined them, smoked them. The one thing is, like, yeah, sometimes the skin won't come out super crisp from the smoker, so you could take a blowtorch to it if you're patient, or I just took the whole thing and dunked it in the deep fryer. That turkey, which had been smoked and then fried, wow. That was like the 11, you know, on a scale of 10.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, I think you've given me a new idea now.
We have a camp chef, which is probably popular at the Boy Scouts too, I'm sure. Yeah, mm-hmm. Camp chef with a giant pot out there, and we would just keep the oil at 375 and just pull stuff off the smoker, try frying it, see how it is. And yeah, the brined, smoked, and fried turkey was even more amazing.
I've also injected it with some butter every now and then. I don't really know how much that helps, but it sure is fun to do.
Yeah, it is fun. It does help some. A lot of folks will say they'll either put salt or MSG or like a chicken stock or something in their injection. And in those cases, I would say, yeah, there's probably some tenderizing and stuff that's going on as well. But yeah, even the butter or one of the simple injections that they sell at Bass Pro Shops, actually, I think I've seen some good stuff there. Can really help turn it up from the inside out, literally.
I learned you mentioned the Camp Chef. You know, I got a Bayou Classic manufactured, pretty large cooker. I also went to the bottom of the internet on that one. And I was trying to figure out which group of people cooks the most on these things. And it turned out to be the shrimp boil crowd needs to cycle large volumes of hot water the fastest. And I got this thing. I don't even know how many BTUs it is, but it makes all the other cookers look like a small toy.
I think they sell a 30,000 and a 60,000. And the 60,000, yeah, it will heat things up in a hurry. Now, when you are cooking your ribs, do you end up wrapping in foil at all or just let them go natural the whole way?
Well, I've tried them both. I wrap it every time now, both because it sort of comes out with the texture I like the best, and I feel like I have better control over the timing of it all. So I don't know if it's considered cheating or not. I know it is called a Texas crutch, which makes me feel like maybe people think it's cheating, but I wrap every time, you know. I'll take that out and a little agave, a little butter, a little more rub, right in that wrap, little apple juice. And they come out the way I like them every time.
Yeah, there's a few tropes that I hear people trotting out every once in a while, like wrapping is cheating, draft systems are cheating, you're not supposed to share your recipes. If I tell you, if I had to kill you, you know, all that stuff. I'm like, come on. This stuff's all on the internet. There's no secrets anymore. And I am pro wrapping and pro draft system most of the time myself. Yeah, it feels nice to run the pit barrel and just crack the lid, heat it up every once in a while. There is kind of a brawny sort of feeling doing that. But I tell you, when I set a draft system on the stump and I tell it to be 260 all night and I come out 8 hours later and it's at 260, 261, it's just chugging. I'm like, ah, thank you.
Yeah, there's something nice about that.
Yep. Any sauce or rub favorites that you've kind of settled on along the way?
Well, on the rubs, I found one dry rub recipe. Probably is quite similar to all the other ones. I usually make that in a batch and then I just use it until it's gone. It's pretty simple. Brown sugar, cumin, garlic, onion, you know, pretty standard fare. So I'd call it probably like straight up barbecue rub. I think its name was like the best dry rub recipe or something like this. I just got it online. And I've used that one consistently every time. My family tends to like sweet Baby Ray's sauce, so that's the one I stick with. I tend to spice it up a little bit on my own portions, but you got to play to the audience.
Yeah, if you were to say you can only buy stuff from the supermarket, I'd probably make my own rub, and I'd probably grab maybe a couple bottles of Stubbs, one regular flavor and one spicy, and mix them together a little bit, and it comes out pretty good. Mm. Yeah, if you get into the competition rat hole, you end up buying competition-sized portions. You end up buying sauce by the gallon. You end up buying rub by the 7-pound bag so you can keep refilling the little 2-pound shakers. But yeah, there's a few good recipes out there. And if you're doing small volumes, the stuff keeps well. I usually throw it in the freezer if I'm not going to use the rub for a little while. And that tends to keep it dry and keep it from clumping most of the time. Any other tips or tricks you've picked up along the way?
Yeah, tips or tricks. Boy, that's I don't have any tips or tricks.
Or maybe anything unusual that you cooked. I've had to do a lot of game meat because the guy across the street from me keeps shooting stuff. He's like, I got an elk from Idaho. I'm like, all right, bring it over.
Oh, that's fun. No, I think I'm still early enough on my journey. I'm trying to master the basics that I'm cooking. The pulled pork is my personal favorite thing to eat. So I tend to make that the most. I did learn the other day in the pit barrel that hanging the pulled pork the way I did it was not the right way because partway through, I was really waiting for the plateau. You know, I'm waiting for it to plateau around 160. My smoke ring was making me happy. I felt great about the whole thing. I'm sitting in my room watching the temperature and it's climbing and climbing. And I'm thinking, this is the most amazing pulled pork on the earth. It's not plateauing at all. Boy, what's going on here? So I went out to check it out. And of course, the thing had fallen off the hooks. Sitting in the coals and was burning on fire. So I issued a few expletives, took it out of the fire, took it in the house, carved off the part that was no longer recognizable as meat. Took the rest of it, though, and wrapped it and put it in the oven. And I'll tell you, that pork still came out outstanding. So sort of a funny war story, but not exactly a special tip or trick. Maybe don't catch things on fire would be the lesson learned on that one. I'm just using the grates now.
I almost dropped the Easter ham into the coals, and that was despite having double hooked it. So there's a tip for pit barrel owners. If you have enough hooks, it's a good idea if you're cooking ribs and you're going to run them in the pit barrel the entire time and not pull them off and wrap them and finishing them in the oven or something, which, by the way, is not cheating. I think that's totally cool. Once you wrap them, they're not taking smoke anyways, so you can bring them inside in the oven if you want. But if you're going to leave them out there the whole time, they tend to get very tender and they might actually pull apart in the middle of the rack and drop the bottom half of the rack into the fire. So what I've been doing is I'll hook the rack in between the bones, then I'll loop another hook underneath that and go further down the rack and pierce that the other way through the bones. So it's almost like an S. And that way you're kind of holding the rack lower as well. And then there's not enough weight of the small bones below that to actually pull the rack apart when you leave it in there for a long time.
Yeah, I've done that same tip with chicken. If I cook in a whole chicken, now, of course, I'm blessed with a family who doesn't really like the taste of smoke. So when I'm cooking a chicken, what I've been doing is making a chili out of it. So smoked chicken chili, which then the smoke is exactly the right amount. But when doing that one, I cut that chicken in half and same thing that you just talked about. I use multiple levels of hooks. One in the top, and then another hook connecting down into the leg to prevent it from falling down into the fire. So it's good to have a lot of hooks.
That made me think of another question. what your favorite thing is to do with barbecue leftovers. I am a big fan of tearing up the meat, whether that's pulled pork or brisket slices or whatever. Throw that on top of some tortilla chips, throw some cheese that we got lying around in there, and then throw it under like the toaster oven broiler for a little bit and melt it.
Oh yeah, pulled pork nachos are a big hit. What I've been doing lately is I take the pork and I freeze it in 1 pound chunks and then pull it out from time to time when we need something fast. But the last one that was the biggest smash hit in the family was a pulled pork mac and cheese. So we're making a homemade mac and cheese. And it's got probably 3 or 4 different cheeses in it. And then put the pork on the bottom of it. It is unbelievably good. Quick, easy meal.
That's a good one. I'm going to have to steal that idea.
And you can make a tray of it.
Pulled pork tends to make a good amount of meat and it's hard to get through the whole thing. So I end up freezing it too in like a quart bag, usually at a time. And every once in a while, we'll take the freezer's greatest hits. Thaw them out and let them rip in a new dish.
Right. That's my favorite one. In the family, that mac and cheese, you don't even have to put it away because it doesn't last long enough. We'll just eat it before it goes bad.
Right on.
Underserved is brought to you by Syrix, the developer-founded, developer-run software consulting company. Do your kids want to see you at more of their soccer games? Does your daughter want you to come to her dance recital? Does your son want you to help him with his homework, then maybe watch a show together? Of course they do. But it's getting harder and harder for you to have family time because you have to put in so many hours at the office to get your mountain of software projects completed and out the door. And you can't hire people fast enough in such a tight job market to help you catch up. If this is you, then it's time to call Syrinx. We have consultants who can slot into your team immediately to make a positive impact on your schedule. We help you ship software on time and on budget. And we help you get back time to do the important things in life, like having a life. Let us get started today. You could reach us at 888-579-7469, option 1. That number again is 888-579-7469, option 1. Or you can email us at info@syrinx.com. That is info@syrinx.com. More time with your family, brought to you by Syrinx.
Next up, we talk to Carlo Crisetti, owner of Crisetti's Butcher Shop and South Shore Meats. We talk about popular barbecue and grilling topics, including some myth-busting. What's your favorite thing to make barbecue if you're going to make it for yourself?
Barbecue. Depends on the protein. I like to grill chicken thighs. I'm a fan of chicken thighs. You have to sauce them, season them. You can't really overcook them. And I have fun with wings. I got different methods to do for wings. But with the Kamado Joe, they have accessories like other grills. They have this rotisserie thing called the Joe-tisserie. This is a circular ring that goes right on top. And then you have the electric motor and the top shuts down, but it rests on top of that ring. And I have a spit and I can sit there and have my charcoal, which their charcoal is the best charcoal I've ever used, by the way. The Kamado, it's big lump wood. It's unbelievable. I use that because the heat is excellent. And then I have these things called smoker bricks. They have a couple different flavors. I sell them in the store also. They're little cubes soaked in bourbon. The one I use is called black cherry. So what I like to do is I can use it with ribeyes, with whole ribs, almost a whole short loin on this thing. So it's like a 10-pound porterhouse steak. What I'll do is I'll season it down. I got different rubs I like to use. I throw a couple cubes in the beginning of this, and the smell is just black cherry, bourbon. It's unbelievable. You'll get a nice deep ring into it. So as it rotisseries around and around, you get the heat from the charcoal, which is that good flavor anyway, but you add this to it and it brings it next level.
Very nice.
It's kind of cheating, right? So I'm not soaking the wood or anything like that. It's already done. It's easy. Just throw it on. Boom.
So actually, the wood soaking and soaking chips is a myth that has been propagating for a while.
I've tried that once.
Yeah, it's overrated. There's this really good website called AmazingRibs.com run by this guy named Meathead Goldwyn. I've actually talked to him a couple times.
Meathead?
Yeah, his name is Meathead. He has a ton of recipes. He has this guy, Dr. Blonder, that's like his research guy. And he'll go into the science of smoke and like why some barbecue tastes like an ashtray versus tastes amazing. And like it has to do with the temperature of your fire and you need clean blue smoke coming out of there, like a 700 degree fire roughly. And he goes into when to smoke and what the chemicals are that make it taste good versus not taste good. And he does a whole article on why you don't want to soak wood chips. You actually want them to burn. You want them to burn quickly and you want them to burn hot to get a nice clean smoke. Syringol and guaiacol, I think, are the only two good tasting things that are in smoke, and that maximizes them and gets rid of like the carbon monoxide and dirty particles and everything. So you're on the right track. Don't soak them. Just smoke them.
Okay. I did it once with wings for the first time at a charcoal grill. Regular charcoals, I soaked these so-called cherry wood pieces, and I had wings. And I'm smoking them, and they looked unbelievable. And it was Father's Day. I had my father over. I'm all excited. He taught me how to grill, so I grew up grilling. We have these wings. I took a bite out of them, and it tasted like an ashtray. It's funny you say that. I spit it out. He spit it out. And he looked at me and goes, Gallo, these are the worst things I've ever had. And I spent hours on this, like hours.
So Carlo was generous enough to sponsor Tasty Bites Barbecue, my competition barbecue team, for 3 years in our runs into the Mohegan Sun Barbecue Festival. And in those 3 years, we placed first in the rib challenge each of the years and came in second in wings in our last year. And so our wing secret is to buttermilk brine them. It's a good buttermilk brine recipe, kind of brine overnight in that. Then we smoke them. And then when they come out of the smoker, like unless you do it real hot, it's hard to get a nice crispy skin. So then we fry them. And then we have a buffalo sauce, the recipe I got from my buddy Brad, who lives in Florida. Shout out to Brad. We dunk them in the sauce. Then we fry them again. And then we sauce them again.
Why not?
There's a restaurant in Connecticut that does this. Call it Dirt Wings. And we tried it when we were doing our experiment cooks. And then we sprinkle them with our magic powder as well, which is basically rub and MSG all ground up. You take a bite of one of those and it's like, oh my God, I never knew this tiny little thing could taste like this.
Wow.
It is quite good. So when you are cooking like a big protein, like a pork shoulder or a brisket, do you wrap at any point or do you not wrap? What's your stance on that?
I'll be honest, I have not done that yet. I was just talking to someone. I really screwed up a brisket one time. I had a nice prime brisket and I tried to smoke it. This is when I had the Traeger. I don't know what I did, but I tried spraying it every 15 minutes with apple juice. We're reading all these recipes and it came out like bubblegum. It was terrible. So I don't wrap yet. I haven't really learned that part of it. So really, I'm just putting it on the grill in a rotisserie format, letting it smoke that way. Or when I do a Boston pork butt, I'll have it rest on indirect heat. Maybe I have some deflector plates underneath, but yeah. You know, it's a quest for always doing it better. You're trying to learn and get better. On the Traeger, I had ribs down as a cook. Not as a smoke, but as a cook. With the ceramics, it's completely different. Just time is something I don't have a lot of, so I get frustrated.
Well, if you don't have a lot of time, wrapping can definitely help. It'll definitely.
Really?
Yeah. So it could take 24 hours to cook a 12 or 15 pound brisket if you just want to smoke all the way and keep low temperature the whole time. So I took classes, one from Myron Mixon and one from Bill Gillespie, who are both champion barbecue guys, and they both wrap. So I'll start 10 p.m. the night before, start smoking the brisket then, and then I'll get up around 6 or 7 a.m. and wrap it. And you can put anything you want inside there. In Myron's recipe, you're just putting water in there and then kind of letting the drippings from the brisket, like you have it on a little screen and then in a aluminum hotel pan, and just the drippings from the brisket into the water will make like an au jus that you can dunk stuff in afterwards. Or Bill uses a more complex wrap that has a beef marinade and a bunch of other interesting stuff.
So he's marinating the actual paper.
Yeah. So actually you bring up a good point. So there's a few ways to wrap. A lot of people use foil. Some people will use butcher paper. That's more like a Texas style, like Aaron Franklin. He has this iconic pink butcher paper that all the Texas guys use when they're wrapping. You can wrap with butcher paper, or if you want to put liquid inside, then you can wrap with foil or use a pan that you just drop it in and then put a couple layers of aluminum foil over it. And once you do that, it basically starts steaming it. It actually doesn't even have to be in the smoker anymore, technically, because it's not going to take on any more smoke. You can put it in the oven if you wanted to.
So you're wrapping after the smoke?
Yeah. You get enough smoke on it for like 8-10 hours, you get a nice bark, and then you wrap. And it helps if you have a temperature probe, because then you can kind of keep an eye on how quickly the internal temperature is rising on it. This will also help push you through the stall. A lot of times it'll stall out 160, 170 degrees and take forever. And there's actually a good article on Amazing Ribs about that, like how to get through the stall, why the stall happens. It's actually evaporative cooling. The meat's literally trying to sweat. And so when you wrap it, it's almost like you being in a sauna with a space blanket around you. The heat's going to stay in there. It's not going to be allowed to cool, and it's going to force the meat to get hotter. And so it'll finish a lot faster. Usually after we wrap it, we'll crank the heat up to like 285 in the smoker, and then it'll be done in an hour or two after that.
What temp are you looking for internally?
So we usually go with brisket to like 203. I have a thermopen and the tip of the thermometer is pretty much like a toothpick. And if I can poke it in and it's like warm butter in both the point and the flat, then I know it's done.
Okay. I have the MK4. Have you seen that one?
I don't know that one.
It's an unbelievable. That's the thermometer I've ever seen. I bought a couple of them.
Is it like a handheld digital?
Yeah, it's a digital, but you open it up like a switchblade knife and it's a probe. You just stick it in and it's instant and it's money every time.
Yeah, it's supposed to give you a reading in like 0.5 seconds or whatever. It's pretty good. Yeah, we got a bunch of those lying around.
It's funny you say that, the story you just said. I was against thermometers my whole life. In fact, in my store, I have directions on how to cook a roast at Christmas time. You know, I tell people, take the thermometers and throw them in the trash.
There's the whole, like, you know, don't share your recipes. You don't need tools, blah, blah, blah. I'm against all that stuff. I'm like, thermometers, A, you know it's safe. B, you know it's done. Like, you know what to shoot for. Yeah, I love the thermopen. I use it all the time. Now we're using it indoors, like cook chicken, like making sure that doesn't go over. So easy to dry out a chicken breast if you're not stopping at like 160, 165. And yeah, I love my thermometer. When you're cooking, do you have a favorite sauce or rub that you like to use?
I got an email about a year and a half ago. This lady owns a company called Hippie Pilgrim, and it's a garlic sea salt. And she goes around locally to all the different markets and stores and sells them. And I get hit up all the time. And sends me an email. I said, hey, give me some samples. I'll take a look at it. They came in and I was walking by it. Finally, I grabbed one and I used it and I was blown away. It was unbelievable. And the one I love is a jalapeno sea salt they make. They have a bunch of different flavors and it's not cheap. For a little tub of it, I sell it for $10, $9.99 in my store. A little bit goes a long way, but it cost me like $7. It's really potent and it's unbelievable. I use it on everything. In fact, when I told you all the things that I smoke on my grill, like the ribeyes, everything, my steaks, my burgers, I put it on everything. That's my favorite right now. I've been using that for a while.
How about sauce?
Sauce. Depends. I just came up with a new barbecue sauce that I want you to try.
Okay.
I have it made for me. It's gluten-free, and it is the best basic barbecue I've ever used. I'll get you a sample of that so you can try it out. But before that, there's this company out in Missouri called Fat Bastard. And years ago, I saw it in a convenience store up in New Hampshire, and I saw the label and the name, and I said, that's awesome. I'm going to get that for my dad. I grabbed it, and then one day, I needed a barbecue sauce. So I'm like, oh, well, screw you, Dad. We're going to open this thing up. And it blew me away. And I called the company. I said, this is the best barbecue I've ever had. It's still one of my favorites, absolutely. And I started buying it in my store. Now I'm the biggest reseller of it in the whole region. And I'm on a first name basis. I'm friends with the family that owns the company. They actually custom make a whole batch of other sauces for me as well. One of them I use in my marinades right now.
Nice.
Yeah, Fat Bastard Hogwash. I mean, that says it all right there.
Woohoo! This is my 25th recruiter call for the same job today. New high score!
The 3-week wait between my first interview and my second interview is my favorite time of year.
My recruiter says he is my best friend, but I haven't heard from him since I started the job 2 years ago.
Your background in real estate and multi-level marketing makes you the perfect person to advise me on tech careers.
Finding your next consulting gig should not be this difficult. Quite frankly, you deserve better. Syrinx is the consulting company founded and run by software consultants. We get you. Find out why our employees are some of the happiest and best paid consultants in the industry at Syrinx.com. That's Syrinx.com. Find a better way today. Syrinx Consulting is a proud sponsor of Underserve, the podcast for the rest of the tech industry.
Finally, we have some tips from Bill Gillespie, an electrical distribution designer for National Grid. Bill is also the pitmaster of the world champion barbecue team, Smokin' Hogs. We cover the rubs and sauces that he uses and how he cooks differently for himself versus cooking for the barbecue judges.
What's your favorite thing to make that's barbecue if you're cooking for yourself?
Oh, man, there's a lot. The one thing I absolutely love, ABTs. Atomic buffalo turds. Now, for those of you that don't know what those are, it's a jalapeno cut in half, filled with cream cheese. I use a little pepper jelly on top of the cream cheese, and then you can either do sausage, brisket, pulled pork, or you can just do nothing. Just wrap it in bacon and cook it. I absolutely love those. Those are probably one of my favorite foods to eat.
They make little trays too that you can kind of stack them once you put the two halves back together and go to put them in your smoker with the bacon wrapped around them. They make these little trays with cones in them that'll kind of stand them up for you.
Yep, I've seen those. Yeah, those are good.
My favorite is still beef ribs, like a plate short rib, like a big dinosaur bone. And normally you associate that sort of thing with Texas and having it cooked over post oak with like an Aaron Franklin type person. But I actually found in Sturbridge, Massachusetts, BT's Smokehouse.
Oh, yeah.
They make a beef rib dinner. There, they give you four of those plate ribs.
Oh, they give you four of those? Wow, I thought it was just one.
So if there's some sort of pig dinner where they'll give you like a couple meats and it comes with one beef rib, but they have a beef rib dinner or beef rib platter and they give you four of these beef ribs. They're all together in a rack. So you got to like chop them up yourself and eat them. And I mean, these things are like huge. They look like something like out of the Flintstones.
Yeah. I know Andy
Husbands.
Andy Husbands from the smoke shop. He does a beef rib too. And we were in there at his Seaport restaurant like 2 years ago. And they had them, but they weren't on the menu. And they're like, well, hold on, let's go see if we have any out back. They did. And they reheated it for me. And it was just as good as if it was cooked that day. It was like leftover from the day before, but I didn't care. I love beef ribs too. And it's really, really good.
So unpopular opinion. Sometimes I like barbecue better day two than day one. I think the flavors get time to meld or something. But like I'll pull it out of the fridge and reheat it and be like, oh my God, that's good.
Yeah, I'm a brisket junkie too. I love brisket. I love restaurant brisket. And when we go out to the American Royal, sometimes we fly out, we borrow equipment. And at the airport, they have this, I forget the name of the little restaurant, but I'll get their brisket hash in the morning of the flight home just because it's brisket in Kansas City, you know. And when I go out there, I try to eat brisket almost every meal if I can.
Sounds like a good plan. So are you pro wrapping with aluminum foil?
I do. Yeah, for competition, I do. At home, not so much because it's different. They're two different animals, you know, competition versus what you cook in your backyard. My personal taste for ribs is just a dry rub, cook them, and that's it. I don't even wrap them. Maybe have a little bit of sauce on the side to dip it in. It's unlike the competition ribs are very overly sweet, super rich. I mean, they're awesome, but you can only have one. And then you're like, wow, it's so much. It's like eating super rich, decadent chocolate cake.
It's hard to eat the whole cake. Yeah. So for folks who have never had one or prepared one, the competition ribs, you start out with a rack of ribs that could be from Walmart or could be some fancy Compart Duroc heritage pork. Yep. You trim it up. You can even inject in between the ribs if you want some flavor solution that contains different herbs and spices and sometimes some salt and MSG.
Phosphates and stuff like that. Yeah, crazy.
You can rub the ribs. There's a ton of commercially available rubs, including some that we'll get to that Bill actually offers. You can smoke it over all sorts of different wood. A lot of people use a mixture of apple and hickory, but that being said, some people use cherry or some people even smoke ribs over post oak, like in Texas. Then you can wrap them, and inside that wrap, you can put all sorts of different liquids.
Yeah, barbecue sauce, apple juice, agave, honey, butter, more rub, brown sugar, whatever, you know.
And then after it comes out of the wrap, a lot of times folks will sauce them and then throw them back on the pit, and you can use any number of finishing sauces there as well. And by the time you try one of these, especially if it's been sprinkled with some MSG at the end too, you take one bite, it knock your ears back. You're like, whoa.
Yeah, but they're so good. And they're so time consuming. And people ask, oh, you should sell these in a restaurant. I'm like, well, if I was to sell a rack of these ribs in a restaurant, I'd have to sell them for $65 a rack. And nobody's going to pay $65 a rack of ribs.
I was going to say 100 for the annoyance.
100, yeah, probably. I'm probably selling myself short.
Yeah. So speaking of sauce and rub, you guys have those available through your website, right?
That's right. We do. Yeah. So I have two rubs. One of them is a smoky applewood all-purpose rub. And I honestly use that on everything from chicken, pork, sweet potato, salmon, homemade potato chips. It's awesome. Next rub I came up with a couple of years ago, and I use it on ribs and pork. And that particular rub has helped us get fifth place ribs team of the year for the Kansas City Barbecue Society for the last 2 years. So 2018 and 2019, we were both years fifth place in team of the year in ribs.
And when Bill is not traveling to competitions and not currently stuck at home, he also does a class where he teaches many of the secrets to being either a great competitive barbecuer or, as Myron Mixon likes to say, the king of the cul-de-sac.
Right. Yeah. We try to do maybe one or two classes a year, and it's a competition style class. So we go over everything that's in my competition program. So it's a 2-day class. First day is basically meat selection, what I look for. I prep everything. I show you what I do, tell you all my secrets, and then cook overnight. We basically just follow the Kansas City Barbecue Society timeline that I have. And all questions are answered. And I'm hoping that people that do take the class, I hope they get a lot out of it.
I definitely got a lot out of it, learned a few tricks that I never knew before that, and we improved our standings in 3 out of 4 categories in the next contest we were in.
Very nice. Good. That's good to hear.
I can personally endorse it, but I am not a paid endorser.
Yeah.
Now, Bill, you have 3 cookbooks out as well, right?
I do. Yeah, I have 3 cookbooks. The first one is Cooking on the Weber Smoky Mountain Cooker. The first book is all about the Weber Smoky Mountain, how versatile it is. You can set it up like a grill. You can do low and slow, hot and fast, a combination of all that. And right now we have over 125,000 copies in print, which is pretty amazing. If you had told me that when I was in high school that I'd write books, I would have laughed at you. My second book is the Smoke and Bacon and Hog Cookbook. It's everything from bacon to whole hog. And my third book is all on the Weber kettle, secrets to grilling on the Weber kettle.
All right. And then you might be working on another one as well?
Maybe. Yeah. We're contemplating the idea. Just trying to think of another topic. Something that can hopefully match the production of our first book would be nice.
Yeah. So for folks, if you've never seen one, the Weber Smoky Mountain or WSM, there's 2 popular models. I think there's an 18 and a 22-inch wide model. It's a bullet style smoker. You can get them at Home Depot or Lowe's. And it's got a real low barrier to entry, but a real high ceiling as far as what you can do with it. There's a lot of competition teams that use WSMs like Harry Sue, Slap Your Daddy. And you can hook a draft system up like the Barbecue Guru we were talking about.
Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, I won the Jack cooking on one of those. So I had at the time before Humphreys came along and started making cookers, I was cooking on a Backwoods Fat Boy and a WSM. And then in 2014, I cooked on 2 Humphreys, brand new, had never been used before, and fired it up and we won.
That's a way to break them in.
Right.
So what's your favorite thing to do with barbecue leftovers? Like maybe if you, God forbid, have some brisket left at the end of the day.
Matter of fact, I did a brisket over the weekend. I had a nice brisket omelet the next day for breakfast. We'll do like paninis. I have a panini press. So we'll make sandwiches, make nachos, maybe do some pizza or something. Or even the ABTs. You can just throw some of the leftover brisket, wrap that up in an ABT and mac and cheese, stuff like that. Maybe put the pork in some baked beans. There's a lot you can do. Tacos, which are always a good choice.
Yeah, I've found taking cooked barbecue meat and then moving it into like a Mexican dish to kind of elevate it a little bit, like nachos or tacos or enchiladas or something. Really, that smoke makes it like so good.
Definitely.
So do you have any tips for our listeners or quick things that might help improve their game?
Yeah, if you can't get yourself a thermometer, like a thermopen, that's going to be huge. Just checking the temps, making sure that everything is cooked right. That and a pair of tongs, I love. It's like an extension of my hands, basically, of my tongs when I'm grilling. And when you're grilling, just keep the lid closed. Don't keep opening and closing it because you're adding time to the overall cook.
If you're looking, you ain't cooking.
That's right.
Now, in your class, I also use some of your barbecue sauce. Can you tell folks about that?
Yeah. So I came up with this sauce back in 2013. I wanted to come up with something of my own. I didn't want to use the products that were out there. So I wanted it to be close to kind of what I was using, but I didn't want to copy it. So I came up with what I thought was a pretty good sauce. And I did a blind taste test with the rest of my team, my wife and my buddy. And they both picked my sauce over the other one. And I was like, oh, this is great. I said, sweet. Now we can use this in competition. And they were like, no. I said, yeah, we're going to start using it. I said, we're never going to know how it's going to do unless we use it. Went to our first contest with it. There was like 100 teams. We finished 30th or so, 32nd out of 100. But we did get a 5th place call in ribs. The next 2 contests, we ended up GCing, using the sauce and everything. And that was the same year we won the American Royal. So we unleashed the sauce and good things happened. It's my Pitmaster blend barbecue sauce. It's a little sweet, kind of tangy, little heat on the back end. I think it's pretty well-balanced sauce.
people can mail order that from your site, but I think you have it in some retail establishments too, right?
Yes, it's on Amazon. If you just search Smokin' Hogs BBQ, actually the sauce isn't on Amazon yet, but the two dry rubs are on Amazon. The sauce is through my website, smokinhogsbbq.com. And it's also at a couple of local retailers at Truckee Supermarkets, Backyard Living in Abington, Assanippi General Store and Noel Hanover Line. And I think that's it.
All right. Well, I have tried it and I can definitely say I recommend it for any of the meats.
Cool. Thank you.
So where can folks find you on social media? I know you're on Facebook. Anywhere else?
Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. It's all at Smokin' Hogs BBQ on Twitter and Instagram. But basically the three big ones.
And that's SmokinHoggzBBQ, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Right. Thank you for listening to our Underserved Barbecue special. We hope you learned a thing or two from our pitmasters. If you have any questions or feedback, hit us up on Instagram. We are Underserved Podcast. Or on Twitter, I am @AndrewJelina. Or you can also email us at underserved@syrinx.com. That email again is underserved@syrinx.com. Until next season, this is your host, Andrew Jelina, wishing you a great summer full of delicious barbecue.